Hello and welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.
Welcome to this special episode of the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. It was the day after the Tour de France 2024 finished, and I was lucky enough to have a long chat, a deep and meaningful chat with the man that just beat the record of the number of wins at the Tour de France, Mark Cavendish. Some call him the GOAT, the greatest of all time, 35 wins in the Tour de France. Here's my chat with Mark Cavendish.
Mark, welcome on SBS. Thank you for having us in such a beautiful rooftop in the city.
That's lovely, and what a beautiful place to finish the city of Nice. Of course, you know, the Tour de France always finishes in Paris on that incredible Champs-Élysées finish, but This was something special, the time trial from Monaco to Nice. And as a sprinter, it meant I could just enjoy that last day. There's no pressure. Of course, I enjoy going into Paris, but with no pressure, just to ride and absorb what the Tour de France was. Mark Renshaw in my ear, my family at the finish. You know, it was super nice.
Take us through what was in your mind when it was like 3-2-1 and then the crowd just gave you a big roar when you went down the slope.
It's special. It's always been special, the Tour de France. I'm very fortunate to have done this race 15 times and to have felt the love of cycling fans with my victories and with my hard times. And as you get older and you have children and you see what this race and what the sport means to them, you understand what emotions people live with you know, through this whole thing. And it is just a sport. It is just cycling, but it's a roller coaster, and it's a roller coaster of emotions and physical demands, with the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. But the memories you make and with the people you make them with is it makes you realise that 39 years old, like, you've been very lucky to do what you love most in the world as a job.
How did you prepare for the media onslaught? You knew there was going to be a lot of people around you, a lot of demand for the media. It's never easy to just give everything to the media. We want more. How did you prepare for that?
I think what is beautiful about cycling and the Tour de France is how close anybody can get to the athletes. That's not just me, it's media. That's spectators, fans. That's what makes cycling beautiful. Like, everyone, not just the athletes, are part of the arena, you know? And that was what I loved about it growing up, and it's what I still love about it. But I think, as with anything in life, it's easy to take something for granted, and that can be done by fans, and it can be done by the media, and you don't get time to chill. But ultimately, like, that's when you get raw emotion, you know? And that can be the absolute elation of a win, or turmoil of defeat, or something bad happening, you know. And to feel the raw emotion, like, that's great as a fan, it's great to see. I have to admit, as an athlete, it can be hard to, you're not seen on a human level then, do you know, like, but it's part of the job. And I have some incredible privileges from what I get to do as a living, and with incredible privileges come also things you wouldn't necessarily choose to do, but it's part of being a bike rider.
But it's multi-generational as well. From 7 to 77, people were here to greet you, to just want a selfie or a glimpse of you. Do you realise that impact you've got across the generations?
I think as a sports person, especially as a father, I see what sports people, especially cyclists, do to inspire my own children. And it really gives you perspective on the platform you have to be able to inspire other people. And that can be somebody who's ridden a bike, like you said, 77 years old, who's ridden a bike long before I was even born, who in some way probably inspired me when I was young, who dreamed of riding the Tour de France. And if you can help pass on that love of the bicycle to them, that love that you have, then it's pretty special. I love the bike. I love cycling. I love it as a mode of transport. I love it as a sport. I love it as a pastime. And if I can get one person to love a bicycle as much as I do, then it's a job well done, you know. And I think many people feel the same way as I do, many of the professionals.
So there's cycling as a sport, there's cycling as a lifestyle as well. If one of your kids was wanting to go into that lifestyle, would you encourage, would you discourage? What would you say?
I'll encourage all my kids to do whatever they want to do, and I'll support them in whatever they want to do, as long as they work hard at it. I know the fundamental principles of hard work, and nothing comes without hard work. And I've tried to instill that as a father into my children, but also to enjoy what they do. And I think if you enjoy something, you're going to work harder at it as well. My children have dreams. Okay, some of them want to be cyclists. Of course, it helps that I can help with that. But my daughter, when she's playing netball for the school team, when I know she's given everything, when I know she's works hard at it, when I know she supports her teammates, I'm proud of her, you know. And my son, when he's at school and he's struggling with his times tables, and he works at getting them right, and he works at doing it, I'm proud of him, you know. And I think my job in the Tour de France especially has taught me some incredible life lessons in not just how to achieve something, but how to come back from hard times and how to work and change goals and work with people, and a lot of things I can pass on as a father, and it can help me give my kids, you know, the best education for their life and whatever they choose to do.
Project 35, let's concentrate on what was Project 35. You signed, done and delivered Project 35. Let's go back when you were at 34. What was the drive to reach that 35? Were you haunted by that number day and night? What was your state of mind around that?
Not really. I think a number is irrelevant. I think having won 34 Tour de France stages, there was two people in the world who were the most qualified to talk about how hard it is to win a Tour de France stage. Mm-hmm. And those are the two people that had won 34 stages, you know? So I know how hard it is to win a Tour de France stage. And I know the level of commitment it takes to do that. But regardless of a number, I think anything you do in life, it doesn't have to be the Tour de France, it doesn't have to be any bike race, it doesn't have to be sport. Anything you do in life, you need a target. It can be a short-term target, a long-term target. And you need something that drives you. Something that gets you out of bed in the morning. My family get me out of bed in the morning, that's sure. But something that makes you get on the bike in cycling terms. Get on the bike at that time you train. Something that makes you do that extra 30 minutes that wasn't prescribed. Something that, when you don't really want to go away from home, you have to go to make it happen. That goal, that drive, you need something that enables you to do that. And it can be anything. And maybe if I'd won 20, a 21 would be that. If I'd won 45, a 46 would be that. It doesn't matter. I think for myself, just having a goal was the main thing. And I think for the story it created, that's not in my control. That's external noise. But it made a beautiful fairy tale at the end of it. So,
when you build a team, there were several pieces to that puzzle. Mark Renshaw was one of them. Talk to us about that relationship with Mark. He works for us. We love Mark.
Mark wasn't just a piece of this last year. Mark has been a fundamental piece of my whole career. And actually saying a piece doesn't show the justice to him. He's one of my closest friends. I think when you live the highs and lows that we have together, you form a special bond, you know, and it's a bond more than friendship. It's a brothership, you know, and he was fundamental to so many of my victories. And we had incredible times together, you know, and he had a brilliant career. And for the Australian riders, you know, as a predominantly European-based sport, we as Europeans cannot imagine how difficult it is to move the other side of the world to do your profession, you know. We can't imagine it. And, you know, he did it. He got had the most incredible career. And he moved back to his life in Australia, you know. And that was a big decision for him to come and spend so much time on the road the last 2 years, away from his family, away from the quiet life he'd worked so hard to earn, you know, to make things exactly how we needed to make them. Like, without him, without so many pieces of our team, of our plan, like, it would have been difficult to win again at the Tour, I think. And his calm nature, I think, is always famous. His calm nature is always kind of contrasted, but in a good way, with my erratic nature, you know. To have him in the car, to have his expertise in a sprint, how he talks about things, how he is with the group, is I'm phenomenally lucky to have had him the last couple of years, that's for sure.
Is there an inch of you that would miss this lifestyle?
I think every bike rider will miss the lifestyle if they're not going to do the Tour de France again. But I have my bike, and that's fundamentally the best part about it. And I've made memories. I've made the most incredible memories. I've had ups, I've had downs, and like I said, the Tour de France has given me such life lessons that, of course, there's parts you miss, but of course, doing this as a job, there's parts of another life that you miss as well, that that you can enjoy when you're not targeting 3 weeks around France every July.
We're the day after the Tour de France, so that technically is the first day of the rest of your life. What is the rest of your life?
Today is the same as every day after the Tour de France. Every day after the Tour de France, you leave this bubble. You've been in a bubble, not just for the 3 weeks, but the previous weeks, months before that, leading up to it. You've been with the same group of people. You've been doing the same monotonous thing. And it's almost a strange feeling on the Monday after the Tour every year, just to... It takes a little bit of time to decompress. It was nice waking up my wife and kids this morning, and some of the kids still sleeping, and my baby girl up, just taking me round by the hand, like, that kind of stuff is...
Fish and chip waiting for you.
What's that, yeah?
Fish and chip waiting for you.
She doesn't eat them before I get there. Oh, she's asleep now.
If you were able to talk to the, you know, 8 years old Mark Cavendish, is there anything you would do differently?
I think times and lessons of life teach you what you need to know. I think as well as things you do right, you do things wrong in life, and both things teach you what you need to move forward. I think if everybody knew what they know when they're 40 years old nearly, they might think to go back and do things different or do things the same. But if they put what they've learned into practice before that, their life wouldn't turn out the same as it was anyway. I'm phenomenally lucky. I've done what I love as a sport, as a job. I've got an incredible family. I've met some amazing people and made some brilliant friendships and memories. And for that, I can only be truly grateful, that's sure.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.